Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Nintendo Everything Refresh, the weekly show where we keep all of you up to date on everything new and exciting in the world of Nintendo. I'm your host, Nick Serpa, joined today by Tom Chaplin.
Hey, everyone.
And we've got Nicholas Chaudé.
Hello, happy to be here.
Yes. Tom, over in your YouTube world, you guys just put out another great video this week, all about Mega Man.
Oh, Sam is, to credit on that video, he's a big Mega Man fan. I mean, he knows the games in a way that I could never. All of them, too. Like, he's played all those games. We give a whole, like, rundown to celebrate the new collection coming out. Sam wanted to cover some of the series and give everyone kind of a, I don't know, a recommendation of where best to start. My opinion is 6, if you want to be, like, a cool guy. 6 is my favorite. But I haven't played them all like Sam. But when it gets to 6, I'm always like, sick. I love 6. But you'll get recommendations and kind of quick reviews for all 11 mainline. And I hope Sam does X. I want him to do pretty much everything. I hope he does the X series and Zeros and everything. Because he has the knowledge. So thanks for shouting it out. I appreciate it. Didn't expect that.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, it's great. You know, you guys are putting out great content over there. We got all of the great folks listening to the podcast over here. So if you guys want more content like this, definitely go check out the YouTube channel. And thank you to everyone who tuned in last week. Last week's episode was one of our most viewed episodes in quite a long time. So thanks to everyone for checking that out. We had a great time talking about the Super Mario Brothers movie and getting deep into all the craziness that is that interesting movie. Tom, we were talking a little bit before the show, and you were saying that you were glad you were not on that episode.
Yeah, because I think it's interesting in how uninteresting it is when you actually go and watch it. And so I didn't want to be the downer, right? I didn't want to be somebody that saw the movie and got too picky or whatever.
No. I mean, it's a good... It's so interesting looking at the critical reception over on Rotten Tomatoes compared to the user score. I think it really just sums it up in a nutshell. Like, looking at the film critically, you know, there's not as much to really analyze right. Super deeply versus if you're just looking at it from the perspective of a Nintendo fan.
I don't want to... Okay, I know I always come with hot takes. That is one thing, like, I saw online of, like, this, like, fake... like struggle where the gamers and the film critics, they just don't get us. But like, and I was ready to agree with the gamers, my pals, my compatriots. But after seeing the movie, I was kind of like, I kind of get where the critics are coming from here. I think I see their point.
Yeah. Well, hey, regardless of what we all think, it is now like the like top grossing animated movie of all time.
I think it's definitely the best video game adaptation.
Yes, that's what it was.
It's fastest. It was fastest adaptation all time, though. Fastest all time.
Yeah, true. Which is not surprising to me. I mean, they've literally been putting Mario on like Amazon packaging for the past like Mario
yeah, I'm
is
not,
just everywhere.
Right. I don't know if box office revenue equals quality. Pokemon Scarlet and Violet or any example of that, but I am happy for Mario, big kind of breakout, and if a movie is gonna make it big out of video games, I'd want it to be this one versus others. So
yeah, if it leads to more interesting projects down the road, I think, you know, stuff that plays it a little less safe,
to
I think
me
that would
it,
be,
if,
that'd
if
be my hope.
If it leads to more Donkey Kong of any kind, that to me is worth it all. So I love him, and so I'm happy to see Donkey Kong wherever he can go.
Are you talking about Donkey Kong in general or Seth Rogen's Donkey Kong? Because there's a distinction there.
In general, I love Donkey Kong. So I'm like Miyamoto. You know, he hits a special place in all of our hearts. He's a funny, goofy monkey. And I know he's like this weird, sick, rad... cool guy in the Mario movie, but we're not talking about that right now. I don't but I love Donkey Kong.
He has some, he's got some, you know, some confidence issues he's got to work through, based on the Mario movie.
Right, but if this leads to like a Donkey Kong world at like a Universal or whatever, and like a Donkey Kong game, like if this leads to more like Donkey Kong, yeah, that's good to me. That's worth everything.
It. Totally. All right. Believe it or not, we do actually have a planned list of things to talk about on this week's episode. So we should probably get into that.
There's a few big ticket items. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Really big thing this week was we got supposedly the final trailer for Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. It was announced the day before. I think it came out on Monday this past week. And did you guys check it out, or are you guys at the point where you're trying to remain free of spoilers?
I definitely checked it out, and I'm very happy I did. I think every time we've had a trailer for Tears of the Kingdom and we've talked about it, I've mentioned, like, this is fun, I'm excited for this, but at the same time, they all feel really samey, and they all feel like they're not really showing enough of the game. And then this trailer is basically everything I could have asked for. And that it does the opposite of that and just shows us so many snippets from so many different parts of the game. It shows us so many ways in which the game is very clearly going to be distinct from the original. Like, this is very much the hype-building trailer. And I think it's probably very intentional that Nintendo is just releasing this now. They've been kind of on a kick of really marketing games heavily in the month leading up to its release. So it makes sense that we're getting just this huge blowout now, and I'm very thankful for it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Nicholas. You know, we talked in a recent episode about where we were all kind of at in terms of looking forward to this game. And, you know, in the past, I was a little bit, you know, I'm looking forward to it for sure. I definitely want to try it, but I wasn't really getting, you know, there wasn't much in the earlier trailers for me in particular.
Yeah.
As someone who mostly wanted to see more of the story, the kind of atmosphere they're going for. I wanted to see more, you know, new things beyond just the mechanics they showed off in the recent gameplay demo. And this trailer gave me, I feel like, a much better picture of what this game is going to be. And, you know, it's hard to really gauge how a game will make you feel while you're playing it, but watching the trailer for this really reminded me of when they showed off the trailer for Breath of the Wild at the Switch presentation in 2017. That just really just kind of cinematic, atmospheric trailer that just sets up the mystery of the world even more. And so now that I've seen this trailer, I'm all in. I'm ready for this game. I'm excited for it. What about you, Tom?
Sorry, I was just getting my aluminum hat on to get some theories out here about this trailer. Okay. Well, you're totally right, Nick. Very exciting, and I think like edited to mimic or mirror that 2017 trailer for Breath of the Wild. I think it has the same pacing, and it also has a moment. And you'll remember this, the Breath of the Wild trailer moment. Zelda crying in Link's arms, right?
Oh, shivers down my spine every time I watch it.
That is the goosebump moment of that trailer. And what I love about this trailer is the goosebump moment is Ganon screaming at the top of his lungs.
Oh my god.
That's their version.
Insane.
So, like, that's such a different tone. The crying princess and the screaming Ganon. That I'm excited for. Ganondorf, by the way, that's particular. We haven't seen Ganondorf in a long time.
Yep. 17 years, I think. Warriors, but yeah, Twilight Princess was 2006.
Twilight Princess, which I don't like that he's in that game. But anyway, the last good Ganondorf is Wind Waker, I think. Good Ganondorf experience.
I
see, like, Zelda is no longer crying in this one, I guess. I think she's finally found her calling. She was never meant to be whatever she was trying to be in Breath of the Wild. She's the Zonai princess who has this special whatever She's like, I think she's actually found her calling, and they're going to close up and tie up that storyline of her failing in Breath of the Wild and crying in Link and not being able to get it done, whatever magic power she needed to get done. And they're going
right.
to give her a full kind of character arc for this game, which that's always, like, that's great to give Zelda kind of this full character arc over two games, which I don't think we've seen that before.
No, I mean, I think that's excited. This is what a lot of people were hoping for, right? I mean,
right.
I never, when they were talking about this game initially, I didn't really look at it as, you know, this is going to be, we really had no idea, and I guess we're still not completely sure where it's going to fall in relation to that game, especially because there are some theories that there could be some time travel elements going on.
Oh, I was going to get into time travel, yeah.
Yeah, so we still, I mean, we don't know for sure, but it definitely looks more like, you know, Breath of the Wild Part 2, in that, like, it's they're going to tie up, hopefully with a nice pretty bow, a lot of the story elements that they introduced, and that's what I wanted, you know, that's, I wish it was in the first game.
So, but, how much, yeah, how think, much, oh, go ahead, Nick, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's doing a very interesting job of kind of feeling like Breath of the Wild, but with more of a traditional Zelda vibe and tone, where, I mean, obviously Breath of the Wild was also presented as having this grand epic story and scale and whatnot, but we've already kind of seen in this game, some of the clips that were in the trailer, it makes it feel closer to a traditional Zelda experience than Breath of the Wild was, like the presence of Ganondorf, kind of some of the side quests and the characters seem to me a little bit closer to traditional Zelda, and it's kind of that, like, hey, we distanced ourselves a lot from the normal formula with Breath of the Wild. Now we're bringing it back towards the center a little bit.
Well, speaking
yeah,
of,
or at
how
least
much,
bringing back some elements of
how
what
much
people...
do you both buy the timeline convergence theory?
Yeah, I choose to completely ignore it because it doesn't actually have any relevance to the story, and trying to think of it just makes my brain hurt.
Because we see Gliok, we see what we think is Mulgara from Wind Waker.
Yeah.
We're seeing all these bosses from different games, and guess what? What's the latest game in the Zelda timeline? It's Zelda 2. Anyway, so...
Well, on one of the three.
One of the three. And let's combine them together. I would love the time travel multiverse part of that being related to the timeline convergence. Especially if the dragons are involved.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, practically, I don't think it would make a huge difference in how much I enjoy this game. Mostly because I understand why people get super into the meta and the timeline and all that. But for me, I mean, I've just always just enjoyed these games as standalone experiences. And it's never really bothered me that they don't all presumably, like, have all these direct connections. But if they do go a time travel route, I would be really curious to see, you know, the full extent of that, beyond just some of the callbacks that you've already pointed out.
Yeah. I'm still firmly believe that, like, we're going to have a lot of references to previous games, but it's going to be very self-contained. I really, really doubt that it's going to heavily borrow from any previous games, aside from maybe Skyward Sword, because that one makes sense to an extent, and it's also the most stable because it's outside of the weird timeline split. But I do think for the most part, they're just going to make this be self-contained. I don't think they want to kind of mess around with the whole idea of this weird timeline convergence too much.
Yeah. 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 It'll be interesting to see. But yeah, I mean, man, in the meantime, this trailer has given fans a lot of little details to pore over. There have been so many videos this past week of people just going frame by frame through the trailer. And I've been staying away from that because that's the kind of stuff where I'm like, you know, I do want to be surprised when I go into this game.
I haven't.
There's enough here that I feel like... Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, but it's been fun. Totally it's valid. Actually fun because there hasn't been a whole lot of spoilers past what's very surface level. I mean, there's some deductions you can make, but for the most part, it's kind of just looking at things and being like, ooh, ah, which is...
Well, it's not even just looking. The music on this trailer was favorite part by far. They could have showed me a black screen and just played that song, and I think I would have got the goosebumps. I mean, it was that was exciting. Like, the music itself was kind of next level on this trailer with the saxophone and, like, these weird, like, techno bass drops. Like, I was definitely, I think that's where a lot of the goosebumps come from.
Yeah.
When those moments happen and like, Ganon screams, but then you hear the Zelda theme, you know, in this weird way, and you're like, oh my gosh. I think the music does so much to heighten that trailer to, like, another level. And if that music's in the game in any way, yeah.
Yeah, don't worry, it won't be.
I know, right? But if it
I mean, I hope. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, it seems, you know, I do think, I mean, just based on this trailer, unless everything we saw were literally all of the... Because, you know, the 2017 trailer for Breath of the Wild also had a lot of cool moments in it. But that was basically the extent of all of the memories, the memory cutscenes in that game. So I guess my only concern is that I hope this isn't everything. You know, they didn't just show every cool moment. But, but you know, it could be. And I would be surprised a little bit. But also, there is more of a trend going on right now, I feel like, where trailers are showing off, like, the coolest parts of the game sometimes. And so I understand why some people are not wanting to watch every single one, because you may not necessarily want to see, you know, that the big Ganondorf reveal that was in this trailer and things like that. You get what I'm saying? So on a somewhat related note, Splatoon 3 is having a Zelda Tears of the Kingdom Splatfest first week of May. So Splatoon 3 is the new cross media cross brand thing for Nintendo, it seems like.
I mean, to
they're
be fair,
they're done making Smash DLC, so now they're doing just all the themed Splatfest they can do.
Yeah, they can't put another, like, Spirits pack out to Smash.
Right, yeah. Right.
To be fair, this does make a lot of sense, like, the whole three things. I think this was something that people had already kind of theorized and guessed about quite a few months back, because it just makes sense, especially after you had seen that they were doing a Pokemon one, Zelda one as a follow-up, you know. It's kind of an obvious call. That being said, it's still really cool. We're actually getting an original stage design, which, in the context of the Splatoon 3 Splatfest, is actually pretty huge, because it's the first Splatfest where we've gotten a, like, new stage layout that's actually really new, which is really exciting. And I also really like the t-shirts and keychains. I think they did something similar for the Pokemon one, and they're just really cool. I love that you can even get them outside of Japan.
Yes. And are these physical items, are these, like, My Nintendo, like, are these, like, rewards you have to exchange points for, or are these just things that you can buy outright?
The keychains are exchanged for My Nintendo points. I don't think those are up yet. But the t-shirts are just normal purchases. You do buy them through My Nintendo, but it's completely dissociated from, like, the points program.
Ah, gotcha. Are you still, Nicholas, I know you were big on Splatoon 3 when it came out. Are you still playing it, popping in here and there?
Occasionally, although not nearly as much as I did after release. I mean, just, you know, naturally, fatigue is going to set in after a while, and it's also just fun to play other things.
Yes. Yes.
So, just taking a little bit of a break.
Yeah, you had a lot of big games that you poured a lot of time into last year. I remember that. That's cool. It's not every day we get Splatoon and Zelda crossover stuff. So that Splatfest is going on May 5th and 7th. Now, this next story, this is my favorite story of the week, because we just talked about this recently on a recent episode of the podcast. We were talking about, you know, how E3 is canceled, and how Nintendo should, you know, do some kind of big live event, and how they already have this thing in Japan, but they don't have anything for the West. Well, that is changing, because just this past week, Nintendo announced that they are having an in-person, fan-focused event up in Seattle sometime in September, called Nintendo Live 2023. And I don't know if this is a replacement for the event in Japan, or if they're doing two events. But yeah, they're promising, just, we don't have a lot of details yet, but they're promising, you know, in-person tournaments, they're promising hands-on game demos, they're promising live music, photo opportunities. So I'm very curious about this. This seems like it could potentially be very cool.
Yeah, I do think it should be made very clear from the start that people should not necessarily expect, like, announcements here. Like, this is not an E3 presentation style thing where we're going to get a whole bunch of Nintendo news necessarily.
Right.
But what we'll have is, kind of like you mentioned, it'll have a bunch of fun live events. It'll have tournaments, concerts, just a whole bunch of things you can enjoy if you're a Nintendo fan. And like we had mentioned a couple of weeks ago, it's really cool that they're actually bringing this back to the U.S.
Yeah, because, I mean, shoot, other than, you know, sometimes they show up at PAX or sometimes they, you know, are involved in, like, Smash tournaments. I mean, they're really, it's been a long time since they've done anything here. I don't think they've had a huge physical presence at any type of show or events, you know, since they were at E3. I mean, they've had, again, they've had smaller things, but the fact that they're having their own event is it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. Yeah, I agree with you that they probably won't announce anything, but they're not necessarily precluded from doing so.
Yeah.
It would be a surprise if they did, though.
I would assume if this is taking place in September that there will probably be an Nintendo Direct that happens, like, the week before it or something, and that way they can showcase some of the stuff that they talked about in the Direct during this event. I think that would make sense.
Yeah, have some hands-on demos. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, I'd be curious to see if they do that, have a Direct, and then, you know, have some demos from that Direct at the show. I'd be interested to see if there will be any third parties there, like any of the partners that they work really closely. I'm sure it'll just depend on what games are coming out, but yeah, this is cool. I think I'm gonna try and go. I definitely want to get more information on it, you know. But just even just as a fan, not just as like media, I think it would be fun to go and just have a big Nintendo focused advance. Nintendo focused event. What about you guys, Tom? Do you think this is something you'd be interested in trying to go to?
No, but I think for families, right? You know, I think this is a thing you bring your kids to. Yeah. You play Mario Kart 8 and you hug Mario and the big thing. It's in Seattle. That's just, I live in Florida. There's no way I could convince myself to do that. And I do think this is a very like treehouse led. You know, you're not gonna, you know, Miyamoto's not gonna be there giving interviews, right? Like you guys said. But we did call this. I will say that.
We did
call it, and so that is cool. That's my favorite part about this announcement, was how we talked at length about Nintendo Live being actually used in America 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like to think someone from Nintendo is listening to our show and they just thought it was a great idea. And that's why they don't have a lot of details yet. It's because they're just now throwing it together.
I know. They don't even say when. Like, it's very odd.
Yeah, they, like, announced it, but they're like, but you can't buy tickets, and we don't know exactly when. But it is a thing. Oh, I wonder if they felt like they had to announce it now, maybe because, like, all this drama going on with E3 and everything. Probably not, but... It did feel like a lot of other companies were announcing more details about their own showcases right around the time that E3 got canceled, and so part of me wonders if maybe this was kind of their response to that, but they weren't going to be at E3 anyway, so probably not.
I think it coincides with the Mario movie more than there's like this excitement, about the brand. That seems to fit.
Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, once we get more information about this event, and we don't know when that will be, of course, but we will definitely let all of our listeners know about it. Similar, more Mario news. Lots of Mario news lately. I'm sure completely coincidental. No marketing reasons behind that whatsoever. But this one's just interesting. The Library of Congress, for those of you who are not from America or not familiar, they are the United States government's basically just their archival branch. They have lots of archives, or lots of old books, historical documents, things like that. But also some other like mixed media stuff. And this week, they announced that they are introducing their the first video game track into the Library of Congress collection, and it is the Super Mario Brothers theme, the original theme song. Joining alongside other songs you may know, such as Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You. So, part of a very esteemed collection being introduced. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of cool to see, you know, a piece of history getting acknowledged by the Library of Congress. I think it's a milestone.
Yeah. I think it's a little funny that it's an American... like, the American government is doing this when, ostensibly, Super Mario Brothers and Nintendo don't really have much to do with America. But regardless, it's a cool honor. It's nice to see that happen.
Yeah, well, I think... So, part of it is they're bringing in a whole wave of songs that they were saying had a huge, like, it, you know, American cultural significance.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you... I mean... I agree with you that it's, like, not necessarily, like, an American thing.
But it's got... It has an impact on the culture.
Iconic. Yeah.
That's fair.
I really want to know, like, how they decide this. Like, who's the person who decides what songs they get into the Library of Congress collection?
Who's got that job?
Yeah. We need to get a Metroid, like, plant in there so they can start bringing in some...
I mean... You want to talk about the best soundtrack on the Famicom? It's Metroid. Oh, so I agree with you.
It's not Zelda 2?
Yeah, I'm a...
Zelda 2, not even by Koji Kondo. Koji Kondo was working on Super Mario Bros. 3, but that is an incredible soundtrack. I will not take the... That dungeon theme, you all know the dungeon theme. It's in Smash, right? That's a classic.
Yeah, temple theme.
The temple theme, yeah.
Yes.
You know, something about Koji Kondo that I didn't realize till I was older and that I think is like, he doesn't give enough credit for. Obviously, he gets all the credit. He's the most credited given video game composer. But like back in the day, he was not just music composer. He was all the sound effects too. He did all of it. Like all the sound in the game was the composer or the composition. So a lot of the more iconic sounds from Mario or Zelda also come from Kondo, and I think that's what needs to be in the Congress. The jingle of the coin being picked up as
right
that's composed by him, and I don't know, the music, video game music always gets ignored, I feel like, but Koji Kondo is the one that I feel like does like elevate out of that status and is respected globally.
yeah we were just talking on last week's episode about how it's so frustrating that more of this amazing music is just not more accessible. Nicholas is literally importing Xenoblade soundtrack from Japan on CDs.
Crazy.
So he can rip them from the CDs.
Yeah, no, it's not a convoluted process at all.
And Nicholas, I'm sure you'll relate. When the Xenoblade Chronicles X collector's edition released and you got the thumb drive with DRM for 12 songs... Which, that's a phenomenal soundtrack.
Yeah.
But the American Collector's Edition gave us the worst version of it. Anyway. Nintendo and music. Like, another thing I didn't realize till I was older is, like, the Famicom songs are just, like, have extra channels because it's a disc. And so, like, songs from, like, the classic Famicom games, like Zelda, all, like, are way more, like, way better. Like... than the NES version because there's less sound channels. There's a lot of things that I don't know, I learned about the music of that era that Koji Kondo, that, you know, this song comes from, that like America got the short stick of, I guess.
yeah All right, one more just kind of oddity that I wanted to mention in this week's headlines block. Kind of a similar, I guess, historical preservation story, although this one is also just amusing to me. There's a museum called the Strong National Museum of Play, and they are working on the largest playable arcade cabinet for the original Donkey Kong game. They're building a 20-foot tall Donkey Kong arcade cabinet that you could actually play. apparently they're working with Nintendo of America to, like, I guess, probably make it faithful to the original arcade cabinets. So there you go, Tom. Talk about you wanting more Donkey Kong. Can't get much more than 20-foot tall arcade cabinet.
Are they trying to, like, make a cabinet for Donkey Kong to, like, play his favorite game? Like,
so, like, his size, you know?
Yeah, giant yeah.
Or something? Won't yeah. anyone think of the funny. Donkey Kong?
Well, I love that idea. I hope that can happen. You know, he gets finally. Donkey Kong's been dying to play his namesake game this whole time.
He can't
time.
Play his own game.
He breaks it every time. Crunches the buttons under his weight. But now he'll be free.
Yes. Now we just have to make a smaller version for Donkey Kong Jr. And just get like one that's like baby sized.
Okay, so that would be like put. I don't agree because Donkey Kong Jr. would have to play a game where his dad gets whipped by Mario, and I don't think we need to put him through that.
Ooh, yeah, that's true. That might be a little traumatizing.
That is, Diddy Kong, then. He's already got a Game Boy.
That's true. Diddy Kong is good. He's been taken care of. All right, let's get into our next segment, talking about the game announcements and release date updates that we got this past week. Not too much, but definitely some interesting stuff to shout out. First one that I want to mention is the next game in the Treen series. I think you say Treen. It might be Trine. Now, I don't know if you all are familiar with the series, but these are really solid co-op fantasy action platformers. And they're unique in that these are games that are really kind of like built around co-op. You can play them single player, but there are four different characters that you can play as, and they all kind of have their own unique abilities for combat and platforming, and they're also just beautiful games. And it's been a while since we've gotten the last one. I think I played Treen 4, gosh, 2017, 2018 maybe, and I think a lot of people kind of brush them off because they look kind of generic fantasy, you know, like the aesthetic is not something right. super unique, but I think they're worth a shot. If you're looking for something that you can play that's like a really like good couch co-op, you know, something a little more involved, a little more challenging, these are solid games. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't expecting them to make another one.
Yeah, I don't have too much experience with the series. I think I played a little bit of, I want to say it was either 2 or 3 on the Wii U. I'm not sure which one released on there, but this was quite a while ago when I didn't have much appreciation for games that weren't like Zelda or Pokemon, so I never played much of it.
Yeah.
But looking at this game, it does look really cool. And honestly, what you said about it being generic, I kind of feel a little different in that regard because I don't feel like I usually see many platformers that are set in such a heavy fantasy setting that still puts so much emphasis on platforming and puzzle solving. That seems like a kind of unique characteristic of this to me, and I really enjoy that kind of take on it.
Yeah, I think some of the older ones, I think it's probably a more accurate description. This one, they're really leaning into like some steampunk elements, which is really different for this franchise, and so I'm excited for this one. It looks great, and I get the sense that this is not Switch footage that we're seeing. but a man can dream. at least it's not a cloud version like our next game. Ooh. That's really the bar to clear. Ooh. If it's not a cloud version, you know, you're doing something right, at least. Yeah, so we also learned this week that so there's a new Aliens game coming out. It's called Aliens Fireteam Elite. And I know people may be a little skeptical when they hear the Aliens franchise is getting a new video game. But
didn't that one already come out? I thought it had.
So I understand your confusion. But no, this is a new Aliens game.
Okay.
There have been a couple projects that came out lately, Oh, wait, you know what? I think I am getting them confused. See, look, it's confusing to me, too.
I mean, valid.
So there's one... Yeah. This franchise is a confusing one. So they had a game that came out that was a more of like a third-person multiplayer shooter. And that one did come out a while ago. But they're also working on one that is more of like a real-time strategy game. Mm-hmm. So yes, you're correct. This one, Aliens Fireteam Elite, this is the first one. This is the third-person
like multiplayer focus, yeah,
co-op shooter. Yes. So yeah, which is already a weird fit for the Switch, considering just the overall lack of voice chat and all that. But playing a multiplayer focused game over a cloud streaming service just sounds like an extra layer of shenanigans.
This sounds like hell. I will say this sounds like a gaming hell.
It's a shame too, because I think I remember hearing that some people that played it that they actually enjoyed this one. Like, it wasn't super deep or anything, but there was just some dumb fun, especially if you like the Aliens franchise. But I don't know how, I mean, like you're saying, I don't know how playable this is even going to be.
Yeah, it's a shame. I wish these cloud versions were more feasible for people, but it's just not ideal. And I don't really, I don't feel like a lot of Switch players were asking for this game in particular. I'm personally more interested in the real-time strategy game I mentioned called Aliens Dark Descent, is a much more tactical game. It's very different. But looks like something that could feasibly run on Switch. And so that's the one I want to see them bring over. I don't think it's been announced at this point, but yeah, we'll see. Tom, do you have any love for the Aliens franchise?
Aliens Neoplasma for the ZX Spectrum. Remake it. Let's do it.
Wow.
Let's bring it back.
That's a deep cut. Even for you, that's a deep cut. I'm impressed. I don't even know that game.
I think it's one of those games where like, somebody like today makes a game for an old console. It's one of those. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
you've heard of those, right? Like people we're making a Genesis game.
Yeah,
it's one of those games.
Fund us on Kickstarter. Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha.
Does Alien Predator, the Alien versus Predator, like the beat 'em up from Capcom, count as a game I would want on Switch?
I don't even know. You know what, Aliens. I love how the Alien video game series is titling is just as confusing as the film series. Like, it's on, like, there's never a number in one of these games. It's always, like, generic subtitle.
I do think it starts to make a little more sense when you generally consider that Alien games are horror games, Aliens games are action games, because it's kind of following, like, the genres of the original two movies. And that seems to be the convention they've gone with for the most part, but then you get weird things like a strategy game where it's like, well, which one does that really count as? So.
Right. Yeah, and I think a lot of folks are just still skeptical of these games in general after Aliens Colonial Marines.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're. I'm glad that they haven't given up on making games in this franchise after that, because there's so much potential to tell cool stories and expand the universe a little bit more. So yeah, that one, I don't think I'm gonna say I'm excited for the cloud version of that game, but I hope the other one comes over. Now, this is an announcement, this next game that is, I think, maybe gonna be surprising to some people. It's, to be clear, this is not a new announcement. This game was previously announced, but I keep forgetting that it exists. So one of the Switch's very small selection of launch games was Super Bomberman R, which I think was a nice palate cleanser for folks who were also playing Breath of the Wild at that time. Go and jump into some Bomberman. And we're getting a sequel to that game, Super Bomberman R2. And it looks like more Super Bomberman, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I think I do think it's very funny that we're getting a sequel to this the same year that we're getting a sequel to Breath of the Wild. That's a funny little bit of coincidence. Yeah.
Yes, significantly later. It's coming out in September, at least in Japan, as of right now. So you might be done with Tears of the Kingdom by then. But this game will be waiting for you, in case you're not. So apparently for this one, they're adding a stage editor. So you can make your own Bomberman stages, which I could see that being fun, as long as there's a convenient way to actually share them. Which is always the question with these types of games. It's, you know, you can play it offline locally, but they also have online modes. They're also introducing a new mode called Castle, which I guess I feel like I'd have to see it to understand it, but they're describing it as a new battle mode in which players are divided into an attack side and a castle side to battle for the treasure. So I don't really know what that means, but I'm curious about it.
It's more Bomberman. I mean, I don't have too much experience with the series, but I don't think fans of it will complain about just getting more Bomberman to play. So
yeah. Modern playing Bomberman, too. You know, something that feels a little bit tighter.
Did we ever find out what the R stands for?
Radical.
That's a good question. I like radical. Remix, maybe? Super Bomberman Remix?
That's an actual guess, yeah. Useful.
That's a good guess.
I'm going to Google it. I'm going to Google it right now on this podcast.
Let's do it.
And we're going to see if
anything. It's been a mystery I've been like not curious enough to know myself for 7 years now.
Okay. Well, I actually found an answer, which I wasn't expecting. Yes. According to the developers, the R in the title stands for Rangers, referring to the name of a team of 8 Bombermen.
Huh. Okay.
So, yeah. Super Bomberman.
Fair enough.
We can all sleep well tonight, knowing that this mystery has been solved. All right.
Why don't they just call it Rangers? That's cool. Rangers is a cooler title than R.
It's a little more unique, right? Yeah, I don't know. One more game I want to shout out that got announced this week. This is actually a port. This game has been announced for a little while. It's called Killer Frequency, and it's a first-person horror game. But the kind of unique premise for this one is that you are a late-night radio host, and the people who are calling your radio station are all being stalked by a mysterious killer. So you're like running this radio station, but also trying to like help people not die from a serial killer that is somewhere else in the world. And I don't know. I think it's a super unique premise, and I kind of want to know like what it's gonna play like. I also just love games that are trying to tell a story about like journalists and like you know, add some weird elements to that. There's like more and more of those games coming out, and so I'm like, cool, finally, journalism horror game, just what the world needs.
Yeah, I'm not a big horror guy, but this does look neat. Obviously, like you said, the premise is very original, and that alone is pretty neat, but it also seems like it's actually kind of delivering on it with some nice visual design, some cool gameplay. Like, it looks very interesting. I love the style they're using for it, and just the idea that, like, you're not just staying at the radio station, you're actually traveling around the station, grabbing items, using that to try and solve puzzles and help people. It all seems pretty appealing.
Yeah, it seems like, if you're not a big horror fan, it seems like the horror is just kind of like in the background. It seems almost like more like a puzzle game.
Yeah.
Which I could see kind of being an interesting subversion of all that. So I'm interested in this one for sure. This one is currently penciled in for June 1st right now. Hopefully it won't get completely buried in all the big summer games that everyone will be playing around that time. All right, so that's pretty much all the new announcements that we had this past week. So let's get into our next segment and talk about what actually came out. Not too much out this week, but there is one release in particular that I'm sure we'll have a little bit to talk about. And that is the Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Collection, which is a collection of a shocking number of Mega Man Battle Network games, which, frankly, I did not realize there were so many until I was looking into what's included with this collection. So I really don't know much about these games other than they are not traditional Bomberman games. I'm sorry, Mega Man games. the other Blue Bomber. These seem more like strategy games in a way.
Yeah, they're kind of like, I mean, it's hard to describe because it is kind of a unique genre, but they're like real-time strategy RPGs that take place, well, not even strategy RPGs, it's like a real-time RPG that takes place on a small grid. So think of it as like an ATB Final Fantasy style system, except that you're moving around by how big is the grid? Like a 3x18 grid or something. And so you have to physically move around to be able to actually aim at the enemies and shoot them.
Yeah, I've never really seen it. It seems like a strange fit for Mega Man, but I mean, they made 6 of these games, and each game has like 2 versions almost. So they must be pretty popular among Mega Man fans.
Yeah, I mean, I've played through a bit of the very first one, and it's definitely a different sort of like combat system. But the game is fun. It's a neat little idea. In a way, it kind of reminds me of some of the older Digimon games. Probably partly because it's just like the sort of cyberverse kind of background to it, but it's certainly a fun little game, and I'm glad that they're actually re-released now, especially because they were basically all on the Wii U eShop. With that going down, it would have been kind of hard to get a hold of them legitimately in any other ways. So this is a really opportune release for them.
Well, gosh, and now I'm just like thinking about the sheer number of Mega Man games on the Switch. It's almost overwhelming. I mean, on top of the Mega Man Legacy Collection of, like, you know, the normal, the typical Mega Man games, you have the Mega Man X Legacy Collections.
Yep.
There were 2 of those. You have the Mega Man Zero ZX Legacy Collection.
Yep.
And now you have the Mega Man Battle Legacy Collection, which is a lot of Mega Man.
Now we just need the Legend games.
Yeah, is there anything else other than the Legend games?
There is Star Force, I think, which I think are in a similar style to Battle Network, and those were on the DS, I believe, but I don't know too much else about them.
Mm. Okay.
But gotcha. I think that covers, like, the 5 or so main Mega Men.
Yeah, it is a shocking amount of Mega Man.
Yeah.
Which, if it seems a little intimidating, and you don't know where to start with the franchise, boy, did Tom and Sam have a video for you. You should go check it out.
Love
on their
it.
YouTube channel.
Thanks for the plug. I mean, yeah, I learned a lot from Sam's video. So
I did too. I'm not a big Mega Man guy. But yeah, it's a little more approachable. I don't think I would start with these Battle Network games. They look a little different compared to everything else.
No.
But I'm sure they could be good.
Maybe if you're an RPG guy, it might be a good transition, but
just turn off the AI upscaler, go to pixel perfect mode, and then you'll be good with these collections.
Turn off the smoothing.
Yeah. If you're gonna play it, that has to happen. If it doesn't happen, your Switch will explode.
Oh man. Now this next one, I don't know a lot about deck builders. I'll just say that out of the gate. So I'm not so sure why this one is blowing up. But this one has been blowing up a little bit. It's called Wild Frost. And I know a couple folks who went to PAX who had a chance to play this game and were very excited with it. It is a roguelike tactical deck builder, which I'm sure is a combination of words that has never been said before. We've never seen this type of game before. But yeah, I mean, it's got a really, you know, charming art style. I think maybe part of the appeal is just that this is a version of that type of game that is not free to play and filled with microtransactions, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of these card-based games, they really like to try and make you buy card packs and to varying degrees of, you know, fairness and transparency over what you're actually getting. So I do get the sense that a lot of folks who are into this genre are just excited to have something new that is staying away from that whole model. You know, so I'm not sure if this is a genre you guys are typically super familiar with, but is there anything about this game that looks interesting or different to you guys? Like I said, I'm not a huge card game player myself, so.
I think I am near a breaking point, because I am not either. But I think they're bludgeoning me. All these games now, video games with card game mechanics, I'm seeing it happen. I think it's a blowing up genre that's like really, really, like, you know, the past few years I feel like it's turned up with like Encryption, right? Inscription? Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Inscription.
Slay the Spire. That's the big one.
Yeah. Shovel Knight, like
King of Cards.
King of Cards. Like, I feel like this, what's the one by the Nier guy? Didn't he make a card game too for the Switch?
Voice of Cards?
Yes. So I think at some point I will give in. I don't know if this game will be the one, but I'm interested. Board games with cards, and this is kind of very RPG-esque mechanic, like with cards. I think that's fun. The strategic part of it is fun. I always just have a hesitation with like a digital version of it, I guess, because I don't know. I don't even know why. I have no good reason. So they will break me down at some point, and then I will be on here talking about the newest card video game.
Yeah. I count myself in the camp where like I think I actually might enjoy a game like this more if it was like with physical cards, like with friends around a table, you know. I guess I've just never really been interested in playing that type of game digitally. But it's worth a shot. One of these days, I'm with you, Tom. One of these days, I'll give it and try one of these. This is not the one for me, I don't think.
For my part, I have played a few because I do enjoy card games a bit, and I have played some fun card-based video games. Slay the Spire probably being like the biggest one, which I think is the case for a lot of people.
Hearthstone too, right?
Surprisingly, no, just because that one takes money.
Well, I feel like I had the Hearthstone phase.
I did play it.
I think everyone had a phase, right?
I did
everyone
play it like for maybe a month or so,
right,
like
right,
years
exactly.
And years back. So that I won't deny. But I haven't stuck with it for the most part. This is fun. I mean, this is kind of following in a long line of roguelike card-based RPGs, which is not a problem. You were asking how this is distinct from others, Nick. I think one of the bigger ones is probably just the art style. Based on my experience, a lot of them tend to be kind of gritty. There's a few exceptions. There's one whose name I forget. I think it's Dicey Dungeons, which is also kind of cartoony and cute stylistically.
Yes, I've heard of it.
This kind of falls in that category where it's very much like a cute card game. And the whole aesthetic of it being all winter-based is also pretty unique. I think that's probably one of the main things. Other than that, I don't see too much, just purely mechanically, that's very different. I'm sure there are certainly unique mechanics to the game, but for the most part, it's a lot of like how good are these mechanics that they have in, and is this like an aesthetic that appeals to you?
Yes. We're all normies in this genre, is what we're saying. So if you are excited for Wild Frost, let us know in the comments over on YouTube what you're looking forward to. Maybe educate us a little bit. Now, this next game, this is right up my alley. And I know this may seem strange, but I don't know why this game exists, but I'm here for it, man. For some reason, there is a Tron visual novel that just came out. It's called Tron Identity. It's the fact that that is a real thing that exists in of itself is just incredible to me. I don't know why this is happening now. I know there's like a new Tron ride that opened at Disney World, but other than that, I'm like Tron is not really the most culturally relevant thing that Disney could be funding a game for right now. So the fact that this game exists in of itself is interesting. That we're getting to see some more like world building behind the Tron world, which I like those movies. I know not everyone does. The first one is obviously super hokey, you know, the second one is really different in a lot of ways and is, you know, not, I wouldn't say an amazing movie, but I think the world has always been interesting to me. And so the fact that they made this whole visual novel expanding on that could potentially be very cool. And I love the art style. And this game is also made by Biffle Games, who, you know, they're a small team. They've made a lot of narrative-focused stuff. It's if you've ever played, you know, Subsurface Circular or Thomas Was Alone, smaller indie games, but they know how to make interesting stories. So I'm curious about this one. Mm-hmm. I'd say.
Yeah, I feel like there's definitely some kind of marketing push, like some new movie or something in production, because this does seem odd otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. There's got to be something in the background that we don't know about. Yeah. But hey, you know what? Even if this is all we get,
regardless,
$15, and if you're into the franchise,
yeah, this is cheap. I would not have thought that Disney would be publishing a game and have it and be selling it for $15. I would have assumed it'd either be like free to play with microtransactions or be like $40 to $60.
Yeah, I mean, I do remember last year when Disney had their big kind of announcement event. I can't remember what it's called, but they announced quite a few games, and this was one of them. The other one that I remember that is coming to Switch is Disney Illusion Island, which is like their brand new original, you know, 2D platformer that they're working on. So Disney is expanding into games in an interesting way compared to what they used to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so if you're interested in the Tron franchise, that one is out now. Now, if you like your visual novels a little more gritty, a little more anime, and a little more like
strategy RPG,
Danganronpa, yeah, strategy RPG elements in there. Yeah, this next one should probably be on your radar. This one is called Process of Elimination, and it's definitely playing into, you know, some of the what I feel like now has become a whole genre in of itself, which is people getting trapped in a life or death situation and having to escape. I don't know what you would call that genre, a visual novel, but yeah, this is that. But yeah, there's also a strategy game element to it, which I think is interesting. And I don't really know what that would play like.
Yeah, it kind of feels like Clue in a way, but on like a more typical strategy RPG style board. Like you control individual detectives to try and find specific clues, and you have to make sure they don't fall into traps or die, and you have like a limited turn count. It's a very unique idea for a system. I'd be curious to see how exactly it works. That's definitely one of the biggest draws here, because otherwise you're right in that it definitely falls into the kind of more generic, very Danganronpa-esque anime escape room style mystery narrative game.
Yeah. Yeah. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, this segment is typically where we talk about games that we're morbidly curious about, but we'll probably not play. It seems to turn into that.
Ouch.
Sometimes.
Now, for what it's worth, there's a demo for this out. So
there is a demo. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly worth a shot if the concept is interesting. I may actually try out the demo later, because this is honestly an interesting concept. I'm very curious to see how the strategy elements work.
Yeah, if you do play, I definitely want to hear how it all works out. I want to mention this last one quickly. We talked about it in a previous episode, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, but there's a new Sherlock Holmes game that came out recently, and I like that franchise a lot. And this one is called Sherlock Holmes The Awakened, and it's actually a remake of one of Frogwares, the developers, one of their original Sherlock Holmes games. And hasn't been getting great reviews, unfortunately, which is a bit of a bummer. But if you like these style of games, there really isn't much like them, in my opinion. So did want to mention that one is also out now on the Switch.
I like that you said the Sherlock Holmes franchise.
Well, I mean, it is.
I know. It's just like, it's true.
Yeah. Do you remember when they were making all those Sherlock Holmes movies, like, every other year?
It was massive. The Robert Downey Jr. ones, or?
Yes, those ones. Yes. That was such a strange time.
Yeah.
See, to me, it's Herlock, Sholmes, or nothing. Thanks,
Adrian. Yes! Ernie. Yes!
Herlock,
yes!
Sholmes.
There you
go. Herlock, Sholmes. I would play some Herlock.
Let us engage in the dance of deduction.
That would be great.
Love it.
Oh, man. All right. That just about wraps up our show. But before we go, we're going to end with our final segment, refresh rates, and talk about what everyone has been playing these past weeks. Last week, 2 weeks for Tom. Let's start with you, Nicholas. What have you been playing lately?
So actually, I've been playing New Super Mario Brothers Wii. Which is a bit random, but essentially, I've had the opportunity to play local co-op with a friend recently. We were kind of just scrounging through our backlogs, trying to find something that neither of us had fully beaten or completed yet. And that's what we settled on, so we started playing through that. And it's been lots of fun. Although I will argue, if anyone out there thinks that Mario Party is the friendship killer, that's false. This game is.
Yes. I hear you. I have memories playing this game with my sister on like Saturday morning. We'd go down and I think we played through the whole game together somehow, which is a miracle considering how much she and I would bicker while we were playing video games like this. But yeah, this game, if you're playing with people who you have a little rivalry with, this game will make those rivalries worse.
It is awful. There are mechanics in this game specifically intended purely so you can mess with someone else. There is no other reason for you to be able to knock a player away with a ground pound other than to mess with them.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good argument for these couch co-op Mario games. Yes. I guess you could call it co-op if that's the dynamic you have. In theory, you're working together, right?
You just lose your mind.
I don't think it makes the game any easier playing with another person.
Like, every time you both go for a jump, and then one of you happens to jump on the other's head, and so you just die and fall in a pit.
Yeah.
This game's amazing, and I hate it.
Now, this was also I may be wrong about this, but I feel like I'm right. This was the 2D Mario game that introduced the propeller hat power?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Have we seen that one in any other Mario games
No. since then? No. They've kind of replaced it with other things, like in Super Mario Brothers U, they replaced it with the squirrel suit.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, oh, you know what they did? You know what they did? They made it a block.
Right. I was gonna say, yeah, there's the block.
Although, funnily enough, that block is also in the Wii game for some reason.
Right.
Yeah, I think the block just became the propeller.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. This is the type of the questions that keep me up at night. So, yeah. I'm gonna be thinking
cold
about
sweat.
No, that's cool that you've been playing that.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's been a while. Yeah, it feels like it's been a while since I've gone back and played one of the new Super Mario Brothers games. I might have to do that soon.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't gotten like a 2D Mario in years. I mean, not counting like Mario Maker, and even then, that was a few years ago.
Right.
So this has been
fun.
Yeah, that
was kind of the last one I played. I never played the Wii U new Super Mario Brothers 1.
Really?
And, I think I just... Yeah. No, I think I skipped over because I played all the other ones and I was kind of burnt.
Yeah, but there were 7 games to play on Wii U. You got it. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Well, you didn't have a Wii U, right? That was one of them. Yeah, you picked one up
exactly.
Afterwards.
Exactly. I didn't have a Wii U until a few years ago.
Yeah. Well, I would recommend picking up the Switch version of it. That also comes with like the Luigi content, and I mean,
yeah.
If you, especially because one of the big criticisms leveled at the new Super Mario Brothers series was that they kind of got very samey after a while. But if you haven't played a 2D Mario in years, I don't think that's going to be as much of a problem either.
Yeah, yeah. Now that they've slowed down the cadence, I'm sure it'll be a good time. I mean, you know what you're getting into, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm not like, oh, I need to play this right away. Like, it's a new Super Mario Brothers game.
Yeah.
But, like...
Play the first new Super Mario Brothers. It's distinct from all the other ones, because it wasn't multiplayer. It has its own design, weird oddities that I really like. the first one.
Yeah.
On DS. The everything post Wii, they play the same. But that first game still has a lot of, like, specific kind of fun.
Well, it was also, like, the first 2D Mario game in years, right? Because it hadn't been one since the world.
Right.
So
it was also the first one in years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. The Game Boy was mostly, you know, a lot of ports and So, very cool. What about you, Tom? What have you been getting into since we last spoke?
You know, I'm going to keep us on Mario.
Okay.
Mario Land series on the Game Boy.
Ooh.
All right. I played through the first two Mario Land basic. What is it, Super? There's Super Mario Land,
yes,
right?
They're both Super Mario
and then, Land. Yeah, and then Super Mario Land 2.
Six golden coins.
Yep. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know. I guess before I get into how I feel about it, I'm curious what both of you think of when you hear those games.
I have played both of them. They're both really short. I think they definitely don't stack up to some of the more mainline home console experiences, although I do think Super Mario Land 2 is actually really fun and unique. But I also think that considering, like, the time period, right? Like, these were the first portable Mario games ever, really. And that in itself was really novel and really cool. And the fact that they are so different in a lot of ways. Like, they share very little in terms of enemies and whatnot. Even power-ups, to an extent. It makes them, like, their own kind of unique experiences, which are kind of fun to visit.
Yeah, I only have vague memories of playing the second one as a kid. I don't remember a lot about it, to be honest, other than remembering feeling like, this is kind of like a weird Mario game. Because, you know, we had an NES when I was a kid, and so I played those ones. But yeah, in comparison to that, it was like, I don't know, maybe I bounced off it. I can't remember if I ever actually beat it.
Yeah, I love that they're weird. They are definitely weird. I love the first game is pure to me. By the way, top five Game Boy soundtrack. All heaters on that Super Mario Land.
Yeah, valid, valid.
Second game, not as quite as strong of a soundtrack, but definitely like a stronger overall product. I find these games very interesting because this is why I played it. I played the first one a bunch growing up. The second one I hadn't played till this. I find them interesting because, one, they, like, involve, like, mythology and, like real-world settings.
Oh,
in a way
yeah.
That's, like, and themings that are, like, so not Mario. And they also, like, Wario gets introduced in the second one. And what I like about this franchise, the Land franchise, which turns into Wario's franchise, is it's R&D 1. So Nintendo's R&D, you know, they got four teams. Team 4 is Miyamoto's, right? That's where he makes Mario. And Team 1 was like the original one. And they would get all the like resources and money and making Metroid and Kid Icarus at the same time, you know. showing off like how great they are at games. But then it was Miyamoto's R&D 4, which would become EAD, that like got successful. And so now all the resources would shift to his team. And when the Super Nintendo and those games are getting development, his team makes Pilot Wings and F-Zero and Super Mario World, right? Legend, you know, all the Zeldas, right? But then R&D 1, hey, you're going to have to make Miyamoto's Mario series for Game Boy, losers. you lost. He's too successful. You're not going to make any SNES games until Super Metroid, which is like way late in the lifetime of that console. Instead, you're going to have to make games for another guy's series and another team. And I think there's a lot of rebellious and like spiteful energy in these Mario Land games, and I think Wario is them. I think Wario is a self-insert for their anger and trying to one-up Miyamoto. Like, yeah, we can make a better Mario game. We'll do everything that you don't want to do in them.
They're like, oh, you want a Mario game? Oh, you'll get a Mario game.
Yeah, you'll get a Mario game. Yeah, you'll get a Wario game. Did I say Wario game? Whoops. Like, so that's
new
what
franchise.
I like. Yeah, well, that's what I like about that series is they're like, they literally like forcibly changed it to a so it was their character starring. Mm-hmm. Like after two games, they're like, enough with Mario. And guess what? They're incredible. The later the Wario Land games,
those are fun.
Really great. And the first two Mario games feel so like, again, they feel rebellious. They feel full of spite. And I really like that. I don't know. There's a lot of competitive juice in them. And that's my take on them. I don't know if I particularly like them as games I like go back to, but I respect them.
Yeah. Maybe not. Sounds like maybe what I'm hearing you say
historically.
Yeah. They're interesting, like, oddities, but they're not maybe as timeless, you know, to pick up and play. If you're to play a classic Mario game for the first time, maybe don't start with these, is what I'm hearing.
I mean, okay. I don't like the word timeless. I think all games from all eras are worth kind of judging from by their own terms. That's why I like Mario Land 1 more, because it's so distinct. Like, clearly they were like, we got to get closer to Mario, and the second Mario Land is like very much more Mario than the first one. The first one, I don't know. There's something about it that's super unique, and how weird and janky the physics are, and the level design is. And the bosses and all the sounds are so weird and off-putting. I don't know. I think if you picked up the first one with the right mindset, you could enjoy it just as much as other games. Because it would only take you like an hour to beat it anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Very cool. As for myself, I've got into something that has been on my list for the past month or so. So last year I played through Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope, which I really enjoyed. I thought it was great. I thought it was a really fresh, you know, expansion of the ideas that they introduced in the first game. Much bigger in scope. The story was more interesting. The combat was more engaging, more freeform. So I really enjoyed it. And they're putting out some DLC for the game over the course of this year. With the big one being there's a Rayman expansion tied coming at some point, which is just going to be so interesting to see. I'm really excited to see how that will play out. But the first piece of DLC that they released for this game is called the Tower of Doom, and it is only available as part of the Season Pass, which struck me as a little strange at first because the other expansions you'll be able to buy. I guess they probably just had to have some reason to sell the season pass, you know, but I didn't really know what to expect going into this. And I enjoyed it. It's interesting for a couple reasons. First of all, it's a totally separate experience from the main game. So you spend so long in the main game unlocking characters, you know, unlocking different sparks, which are like the attributes that you can use to give yourself new abilities in combat. You spend the whole game doing that, and this game throws it out for a completely different progression style. So you are kind of tasked with going through the 10 floors of this tower, at least is kind of how the premise of it, but you're really not going through floors at all. Really what you're doing is you're going through You're basically given a choice of battles, right? So each floor of the tower presents you with a couple different options for battles. And depending on which battle you pick, you'll unlock different types of rewards that can potentially help you in the next battle. So you're choosing which type of encounter you want to get into based on how you want to build up your party for the following 9 or 8 battles, whatever. So, and I can't tell if it's completely, like, if all these stages are randomized each time, but it's like a much faster, like, version of the progression in the main game, which I find really interesting. So you, for example, you start with, like, a super small party, you know, you're given, like, 3 or 4 characters, which is, I'd say, probably about half the original game party size.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're given a choice. You're like, okay, well, I could go take on this battle, which is a little bit tougher than my current level, but I could unlock this character that I'm really familiar with. Or I could go over and do this other battle, which is, you know, completely different in its format and structure, and I could unlock some new sparks, you know, I could maybe get some more coins and get some more healing items if I'm struggling. It is a little bit harder in some ways in the base game because it takes away, if you're playing on the normal difficulty, you can't heal your team between battles. So you do kind of have to, you know, weigh your resources a little bit more. So it's interesting. It's they do suggest you play through the main game first, and I can see why. But as kind of like, you know, a little extra taste of that game's combat and a little bit of a different structure, it's compelling.
So would you say it's kind of like roguelike in a way? Because that's sort of what it sounds like.
Well, and that's, you know, I that was what I was expecting going in. But it doesn't really feel like a roguelike because you're not really penalized for, like, restarting battles. You know, you can do multiple runs through, like, the tower if you want. And there are, like, harder versions of it once you beat the initial version. But it doesn't... I haven't died yet, so it doesn't seem like it's, like, a... They don't warn you against, like, oh, if you die, you'll lose all your progress or anything like that.
Right.
But, yeah.
That's funny. It sounds kind of like the Xenoblade 3 expansion pass thing. Like that roguelike.
Well, that's what I was kind of thinking about that when you were describing it. Yeah, it does seem to bear some similarities with that. So, but yeah, I'd recommend it. I don't think I would buy the season pass for it. It's not that substantial. It only took me a few hours to get through, but yeah, I think it's a good little taste of what could be to come.
Nice.
I'll never forgive them for getting rid of Yoshi in the sequel. So.
But you got Rosalina. Or Rabid Rosalina, at least.
Rabid Rosalina. Yoshi
hasn't done anything to anybody. I can't believe they would get rid of Yoshi for anybody. I'm legitimately mad about that removal of the sequel. I think that single-handedly has kept me from buying the game.
Well, he might be getting his own movie if that tease at the end of the Super Mario Brothers movie was anything to hint at.
Yeah, well, I hope there's a DLC pack for this game that adds him back in then with the movie launch.
There you go. Well, one of the expansions, they say they're going to a whole new planet, so it's possible. Maybe they go to...
Did they say Yoshi's Island? Did they say a whole new island or planet?
They did not say island.
Well, then we're not... Planet,
could be good at Galaxy. You don't know.
I think with that just about wraps up our show for the week.
Oh, wait, no. What about the random NES online games you've been playing?
Okay, all right. Well, I wasn't going to mention it, but I'll mention it. So I've just been dabbling a bit more. I think I was inspired by the last time we talked, Tom, where you were talking about playing Zelda 2. And you know, this was one of those weeks where I'm just, you know, I'm kind of in between big games. I didn't want to commit to something huge right at the moment. So I was like, I'm just going to go, you know, see what's on Switch Online that I haven't gotten into. And I will say, like, you know, as much as I was a little bit bummed that they got rid of the Virtual Console format, there is, like, some benefit to the subscription service. That being, you know, it's encouraged me to try out some games that I probably would not have bought had I needed to spend a full $8 on it. Like, for example, I was really enjoying playing River City Ransom this week on NES Switch Online, which I never played before. And I like a good beat-em-up every now and then, and I thought it would be fun to kind of go and see one of the really, you know, an earlier entry. And I've never played a beat-em-up game from the NES era, really, in any depth. So, and I had a great time with it. And I don't think I would have tried it if I hadn't had the subscription service. So they're doing something right.
If you want to follow up your River City Ransom, there's a great indie game on the Switch called Friends of Ringo Ishikawa that's very inspired by both River City Ransom, or the Kunio Kun games, and Shenmue.
Yes, I've heard of it. It's its whole own series now, too, at this point, isn't it? There's a couple of them?
Well, there will be another one, but it's just the first game for now. But yeah, that game blew me away with how smart it was. And but it's also, there's also this like beat 'em up, just punch dude part of it too.
Right, right. But yeah, Tom, we were talking a little bit earlier about, I can't remember if it was on the show or before the show, but the quality of the emulation through Switch Online. And I was a little bit surprised at certain, like, another game I played this week, I was playing a little bit of Gradius. and the emulation on that game on Switch Online is not good. It is just,
well, I don't think it's any worse than the other ones. It's just that one's so reliant on on having no lag, no input delay, because that's such a difficult game, and you really feel it. And yeah, the emulation on Nintendo Switch Online, especially with NES games, it is, they, if you ever play a game on the NES and you didn't like it on the Nintendo Switch Online, like, can't 100% take that opinion as gospel, because you didn't really play the game. There is like such an input delay that it does feel wildly different on something closer to actual like original hardware. That's my caution. I love that it's accessible and I can pop into ice hockey whenever I want.
Right.
But in my back of my brain, I know I'm not playing the real game. And I don't want to be one of those people, but it's so different that it's worth, I think, mentioning.
Yeah, and most people won't know or maybe even care, you know? I mean, if you've never had the original hardware or it's not accessible to you, I mean, you're not probably going to be thinking about that. But, I mean, I never played Gradius on the original NES, but I mean, I got to a point in the game where I was doing pretty good. And then I picked up a power up, and the frame rate just like dropped to a crawl. And I'm like, is this how it ran on the original NES?
Unfortunately, can't happen on the original NES.
I believe it, but you know, part of the point of like being able to emulate these games on modern systems is I would argue to make them a little more. I don't want to say playable, but to, you know, we have more powerful systems that can potentially alleviate some of these issues in theory, these frame rate issues, and you know, you would hope could, you know, avoid things like input latency, which is clearly not the case.
Yeah, the input latency is mostly what I'm talking about. I think the frame drops are probably true to original hardware.
Yeah.
And that they're emulating that faithfully, of course, but not the input, which I feel like input is like the most important thing for especially the harder games on the kind of, I don't know, slate that they have for everybody. I don't know, like, even Mario, even Super Mario Bros., like, to play that with bad late input, like, that's a hard game.
Oh, and yeah, no doubt.
You might not like it playing it on NSO because of that kind of difference. You might like it more if you had them closer to no input latency. You might actually enjoy it a bit more. Same with Nicholas when you play Zelda 1. you know, keep that in mind.
Yeah, I'll keep an open mind.
I don't know. Maybe you might have to go to other means, you know, Super Bomberman R, you know. Like you might have to go to other means to play that.
Yeah, I'll just whip out my NES Mini.
I wonder if that's better. I didn't get one of those, so I wonder if that one's better.
Yeah, I was going to say, because doesn't a lot of, when people are talking about lack of latency, I mean, if you're trying to play on a modern TV, too,
yes,
that's still going to introduce
some latency. Yeah, that's another problem. Like, get the CRT hooked up with the NES is like that. When I want the real game, that's where I go. Well,
I promise you, the first thing I do when I get my Tears of the Kingdom OLED is boot up Zelda 2. Just for you, Tom.
Oh, I love it. Hey, if you ever need help, I'm here for you. I got you. I'll make a guide for the channel.
Thank you, sir.
How to beat Zelda 2, and we'll be good. I might actually do that. So it might not even be a joke.
No, hey man, you probably know more about that game than anyone else at the site. So
yeah, hit that SEO.
I'm curious to see it. There you go.
Hey, that is searching for. That's evergreen, right? It's evergreen as Link's Tunic.
Timeless.
Yeah, that's what. That's what we're all about here. Yes, timeless. Tom's favorite word.
Look,
all right, folks.
People overuse it for old games to little them.
No, but you know what? It's a great point, and I never thought of it. And now the next time I say something's timeless, I'm really going to think about
it. Is Citizen Kane dated? It's like, come on. That's still a great thing.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. This has been a great episode. And thank you to everyone who's been listening. We really appreciate everyone's support. And if you like what you hear, please go rate us on the podcast platform of your choice. That can really help us get a little bit higher in the algorithm. So I've been told. So yeah. And if you have any suggestions or feedback for the show, we're always open to topic ideas. So feel free to drop us a line. Our email is in the show notes. And yeah, with that, thank you so much. And we will be back at you next week with everything new and exciting in the world of Nintendo.